Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up, what does Ryan Fitzpatrick think about Caleb Williams' future in Chicago? And is it Jackson Dart time? Plus, Charles Robinson, Ben Fox with our full Week 2 preview. Inside coverage is next. It is week two, everybody, and welcome to Inside Coverage. We're here Monday through Thursday with the how and the why around the National Football League. Thank you for liking and subscribing and sharing however you listen to this show. It's a podcast. Tell your friends. Tell them all about us, because we're here every single day. And if you're watching on yahoosports.tv, we appreciate you there as well. We're in all your smart TVs. Just, you know, pick up the remote and find us in the smart TV. We're thrilled to be here, yahoosports.tv. My name is Andrew Siciliano, and week two is finally here. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the bearded, fantastic Amazon Prime Video pre- and post-game analyst, will join us for a look at the Thursday night opener coming up in a second, but for a look at all the games, week number two. And it is a fantastic schedule here, week number two. Our preview show is we're going to do every Thursday. Charles Robinson and our betting analyst, Ben Fox. Gentlemen, happy week two. Charles, how are you feeling, first and foremost, dude?
We're going to do this every week.
I want to do this every week because I want you to be better. Every week.
All right. Well, it turns out I've had bronchitis for over a month. I found that out on Monday. And so we're working our way through that with antibiotics and another doctor's visit tomorrow. So we're going to get there eventually. I'm going to get we can have a bet here. Who's going to get off of injured reserve first, me or Brock Purdy?
You do have the designation to return. Do you want me to not ask, Charles? Because I'll be honest with you, sometimes, like when my mother, and if she's watching, hi, Mom, asks, or loved one, let's put it that way, always asks you the same question and it gets under your skin. Do you want me to not ask?
No, it's fine. I'm sure Dawn is like, please, God, let him talk to someone else about this. She's probably so tired of hearing it.
We'll just do that. Ben, your health is okay, right?
Yes, feeling good. And I can't give Charles any more grief from that, you know, leaving the Vegas trip early anymore. So now I feel bad for that before. So I hope he feels good. And yes, hopefully it is an injury designation every week. Hopefully next week we're moving towards, you know, probable and then on the field. But I think we're moving in a positive direction. Hopefully they've identified it. We're good to go.
Slight tip, don't go to Vegas in the middle of a bout of bronchitis. It's a bad idea.
Charles might have limited today. He's officially limited today, but he is probable for game day. There are six divisional games highlighting the week two schedule. We're going to start with one that is not a divisional game. We're not going to call this a full game preview, just give you the biggest headline in the NFL today. And that is that Brock Purdy ain't playing this week, and it might be a couple of weeks. It might actually be 2 to 5 weeks, which means come on down, Mac Jones. Yes, it is a bit of a shoulder, but the big injury here, Charles, for Brock Purdy is turf toe, which, you know, fans at home might go, big deal, it's your toe. No, turf toe's bad. Turf toe's not something you magically snap your fingers and you come back from in a week. Now, maybe he's back in a week. I don't know, but we know he's going to be out this week. George Kittle also out this week. And now you turn to a guy that did start. Mac Jones did start last year for Jacksonville down the stretch when Trevor Lawrence got hurt. But this stat jumps off the page for me. And I know they're playing the Saints, but Kyle Shanahan as a head coach, Charles, 62-30 with Brock Purdy or Jimmy Garoppolo. With everyone else, 9-32.
A little tougher. A little tougher with the rest of the cast of characters. And yet I hear all the time Kyle can do it with any quarterback. I don't know about that. Like, let's stick to the data. And I think the data says he's had two pretty good quarterbacks between Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy. That, as you said about the turf toe, what's really difficult about this is they can give you a range. They can say, sure, 2 to 5 weeks. It might be 5 to 8 weeks. By the time we get to week three or week four, seeing how it progresses, it may not be responding the way that they hope. And it's particularly troubling with a quarterback, because as a quarterback, you play in a pocket where your feet get stepped on. you're literally in the middle of a cattle herd all the time, and having a turf toe, coming back from a turf toe, you're one footstep away from an aggravation of it. So yeah, I mean, this is remarkably frustrating. I actually had a chance to text with somebody in the organization, and you know, I'd gone through there for training camp, and you could already tell that the 49ers were frustrated from the talent that had departed in the offseason, a multitude of players that went elsewhere and signed contracts that were beyond just one-year deals elsewhere. They were losing real players to other teams, and you could already tell that Kyle was slightly frustrated with the youth that he was having to coach up, and he was slightly frustrated with the injuries at wide receiver. You know, at that time, they were dealing with Juwan Jennings. They had just gotten Ricky Pearsall back on the field from a little slight ding at the start of camp, obviously waiting on Brandon Ayuk. Then you flow into the George Kittle injury, now Brock Purdy. I don't know what Kyle Shanahan did to the football gods. He did something to upset them, because this is this can't get any. I thought it couldn't get any worse after the Kittle hamstring. This is obviously worse.
Yeah, I would just add, from a betting perspective, like, this is obviously the game with the most line movement, right? In week two, 49ers opened as a 7-point road favorite in New Orleans. By comparison, the Cardinals in week one were a 6.5-point favorite, right? So fully healthy, roughly equivalent there. This moved to about 4.5 once we heard that Purdy had the toe injury and the shoulder injury. And then on Wednesday afternoon, moved to -3. So 49ers -3, a 4-point move, which is right in line. I do this piece every year where I ask a bunch of odds makers. I ask 12 of them to basically give me the value against the spread of every starting quarterback versus their backup quarterback. And in that article, it was 4.2 points between Purdy and Mac Jones as his backup. So this is move 4. They said 4.2, right around that. And part of what Charles had said is also kind of integrated in that article is, you might think it would be a bigger difference between Purdy and Mac Jones based on the spread. But part of that is the infrastructure of the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan as the head coach, and figuring they're still going to have kind of a higher floor with him calling. I would say also George Kittle is one of the few tight ends that does have a little impact to the spread as well, whether that's a quarter point, half a point, or a little more, and obviously blocking in the run game too. So a huge difference, obviously, between the two quarterbacks. The public is still going to be backing the 49ers. It's potentially an overreaction. We got about 75% of the bets on the Niners. Again, you're getting the Niners at only a field goal. I know it's Mac Jones starting, but only a field goal in New Orleans. So I think the public is still going to be backing the Niners here, but I think that's probably where the line will stay. It's not going to go further past Niners -3. I don't think it's going to go -2.5. It could come up a little bit, but it's been a really big line movement, obviously, since Purdy's injury.
Mac Jones was 2-5 down the stretch last year for the Jaguars when Trevor Lawrence got hurt. The Saints, by the way, who are 0-1, obviously, they lost to the Cardinals in week one, gave them a battle. Game was maybe a little bit closer than some had thought. They have not opened 0-2 since 2017, which surprised me. And they did have 5 sacks a week ago, so they can get after the quarterback. They may be getting after Mac Jones. This is a Kevin Kugler, Daryl Johnston, Allison Williams game on Fox. That crew called Browns and Bengals a week ago. Let's get to the Browns and the Ravens this week. That's an AFC North battle with both teams coming in at 0-1. There are a lot of storylines in this game, including the fact that the Ravens are celebrating their 30th anniversary. Remember, they were the Browns. They moved to Baltimore in 95. Their 30th anniversary with the Browns coming to town. And they will have the former mayor of Baltimore and governor of Maryland on the field as pregame captains. There's a lot to unpack there. The Ravens say they planned to do it all along in their home opener. They just didn't know it was going to be the Browns. And then it happened to be the Browns. It also happens to be Joe Flacco, who has, by my count, 96 of John Harbaugh's 172 regular season wins. Now, Flacco has played the Ravens as the Jets quarterback, but that game was up at the Meadowlands. This is the first time he's going to be in Baltimore in a different uniform, facing his old team. Flacco did admit this week that, yeah, it means something to him, but you're not going to see him be anything other than Joe Flacco, at least emotionally and overtly, come game day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, even if I'm not, you're not going to know. So, I've been criticized my whole career for not being able to show any emotion. So I think that's the last thing you have to worry about with me. So
he's going to be Joe Flatline. Lamar Jackson did say yesterday that Joe used to be the funniest guy in the room and when he was a rookie and Joe would crack him up. So it's all going to be good times. And Flacco is throwing the ball against a former teammate as the defensive coordinator. Like Zach Orr, his former teammate, is the 33-year-old defensive coordinator of the Ravens. And then you have the trash talking. So let's get to the disrespect angle. I am personally of the belief that the spread should never be disrespect. Okay? It's meant to just make money for the casinos. That's all it is, right? The house has got to win. The number is the number. To balance things out, don't be disrespected. However, don't tell that to anyone in the locker room because for years, the spread has been used as motivation. The spread this week is 11.5. 11.5. Despite the fact that the Browns and the Ravens have split the season series in 6 of the last 7, and the Browns actually beat the Ravens last year in Cleveland, not in Baltimore. Jerry Jeudy talked about it, said he was disrespected. Grant Delpit did the same today.
Not hard.
Grant, I mean, going back now, we saw it last year. You obviously weren't afraid in that first matchup to take him on.
Yeah.
So where does that come from? Is that a mindset?
I mean, we're playing football, man. It's tackle football. Somebody got the ball, you got to bring them down.
All right, so that was Grant Delpit not only talking about the fact that they're 11.5-point dogs, but that it's not hard to tackle Derrick Henry. Last year in Cleveland, Delpit destroyed Henry, blindsided him as he broke through the line and knocked him down. Biggest hit of the year, maybe, from the Browns. He was smiling. That's Grant Delpit. He's playful. Said the same things last week about the Bengals, but Derrick Henry says, as you can see on the screen here, Charles, we'll see on Sunday. Where are you on the effectiveness of bulletin board material for a game in the division that you know is going to be a physical football game anyway?
I mean, I feel like in the AFC North, you don't really need it, right? I always feel like the AFC North, the teams play each other. You know, they're all rough games. I mean, it is one of those divisions that is marked by teams that all show up to play each other, regardless of what the record is. And, you know, it's funny that the Grant Delpit, you know, the whole thing, not hard to tackle him. And he gets asked the question about you weren't afraid to take him on. He's a strong safety. There are 31 other strong safeties in the league who will say the same thing. I'm not afraid to take anybody on. It's germane to the position I play. I am supposed to want to take on everybody. That is why I play this strong safety position. All the side storylines, they're fun. You know, the Joe Flacco one, first off, I apologize for stepping on the Joe Flacco audio there. How dare I do that? When you said it's the 30th anniversary, I guarantee you, people who hear that, one of the first things that'll run through their mind will be, is it the 30th anniversary since Joe Flacco won that Super Bowl with the Ravens? it just feels like it's been that long since Joe Flacco won that Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens. If I'm these two teams, the bigger storyline for either of them is you don't want to start 0-2. Like, if I'm the Ravens, I'm sitting there saying, man, I just lost in the most brutal fashion possible against the Buffalo Bills. And I always get worried when you see games like that, particularly in prime time, where two teams are just absolutely hammering each other and it takes out so much emotion. When I saw the line to this game, the only thing I thought was, what if Baltimore really extended itself in that? Like, sometimes you see a letdown when you've had a primetime game where you've absolutely battled and you have that deflating loss at the end, the way that the Ravens did. I'm not saying that Baltimore isn't capable of falling into an 0-2 hole here, but you definitely don't want to fall into an 0-2 hole against the Cleveland Browns team that, frankly, Vegas all season long is going to make the underdog in most of the games that they play, largely because of the quarterback situation. Even though I thought against the Bengals, there were a lot of like nice young pieces that showed up to play. Fannin is showing something. Charles Tillman. I was worried after Charles Tillman suffered the concussion and it lingered on and on. I liked him and I'm like, has this altered his career? I watched him against the Bengals. I thought, nope. Oh, this guy feels like he's back. Quinshon Judkins is not going to be on the field, but now he's in the fold for them. The Browns do have some things going for them. And I think the bigger disrespect is really looking at the Browns and being like, you know, do you really take this seriously? Like, are you, you know, are you afraid, or is this something that reflects upon you and the spine that you have as a team? It doesn't. It's Vegas. The line is the line. I guarantee you these two show up, and I'll be shocked if it's not closer than the line.
A guarantee already. We're early in the podcast here.
Yeah.
No, listen, the spread is fascinating, right? The Browns, like you said, are going to be an underdog in a lot of games. Sportsbooks release lines pretty much for every single NFL game now after the schedule released, right? So back in May, this was 12.5. That was also, I believe, tied with maybe as Bills Saints, I want to say, as the largest spread of the season and the largest spread for the Browns as well. Conversely, I think they were projected to be 10.5-point road dogs against the Lions in a couple weeks. So it was always going to be a big spread. I think a lot of that is the Ravens. One odds maker I spoke to earlier this week said he actually raised the Ravens' power rating above the Eagles. He had them 0.5 below the Eagles. He now has them 0.5 above the Eagles as the NFL's number one team, despite that loss, just because of how they looked, the offense, and how dominant they were. So I agree with Charles. There's kind of two ways this game can go. Maybe there's a little bit of less of a letdown factor because it's at home as opposed to on the road. But it's a big spread. I look back, I think Lamar Jackson is undefeated as a double-digit favorite, just straight up, so winning the games. And I think John Harbaugh in his career, I think it was 35 or 36 games, he has lost once as a double-digit favorite. I think it was back in like 2011, so pre-Lamar Jackson days, but a very long time ago. So for survivor pools, I think this is going to be the number one game or one of the top two. In terms of the spread, it will certainly be interesting whether or not the Browns can keep it close. And the Ravens, we only have one data point, right? Because the Ravens just played the Bills and the Browns had a game against the Bengals. But the Browns moved the ball and their defense obviously played very well. I think for the Ravens, you saw how great their offense was against what should be a decent Bills defense. The question is that Ravens defense still really, really good? And the Bills offense with Josh Allen is just that much better? Or is the Ravens defense a little leakier than we thought potentially it would be? I think we'll find out a lot about that against the Browns.
Yeah, tale of two different defenses here. I know it was against Josh Allen, but the Ravens defense, you look at the numbers by the end of the night after that fourth quarter that Allen and the Bills put up, the numbers are atrocious. Conversely, you look at what the Browns did against a very good Bengals offense. They look like the best defense in football, especially, well, if you can't throw out that opening drive. So, two very different teams. Week one is very often a liar. We'll find out if anyone was telling at least a shred of the truth with either of these teams week number one. All right. Kevin Burkhart, Tom Brady, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi to make you cry on Fox in the late window at 4:25 Eastern time at Arrowhead. Your Super Bowl rematch. If you don't remember by now, the Eagles beat the Chiefs 40-22. This is the 11th regular season matchup of the previous season's Super Bowl. The winner has a 7-3 edge if you're scoring at home. What's most notable to me, Charles, is that Xavier Worthy was on the practice field today. Now, yeah. I can't imagine he is going to play. And I don't know if this is just, you know, tomfoolery and hijinks and shenanigans from Andy Reid, but the idea that he was out there at a minimum suggests that this is not a month-long injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be an Andy Reid special, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, like, just to put it in the mind of the Eagles, you know, make them think maybe we have to prepare for this guy. I would just be stunned if he's right back out there. And if he is, I mean, you got to be taking a shot at that point. You know, they're popping the shoulder back into place. You get the shot and you go out there and you play with one shoulder. I just don't see how it's possible that ultimately He ends up stepping out on the field on this one. I think I talked to somebody with the Chiefs. It was funny. We were texting and he said, you know, it would have been really nice if Jalen Carter was suspended this game and it was treated as the first game. I mean, I think they really were like, you know, he did it in game. So technically, how can you count it as a suspension? But, you know, that's they're very concerned, I think, about that Eagles defensive line. You know, I think as good as Josh Simmons has been talked up by Patrick Mahomes, I think this is going to be a very, very challenging game, you know, for him. And again, I think we keep going back to peeling away pieces for the Kansas City Chiefs. At what point you have to find a player that now is going to step into you know, this void. I still think Tyquan Thornton is the one who has the opportunity here. 25-year-old former first rounder who has the asset of deep speed that the Chiefs really value. Now Worthy is going to be out of the way, at least for, I would think, at least a week, if not longer. That's what I think the Chiefs really need to work with moving forward. They got to find somebody and like healthy in the wide receivers who can step to the forefront, or and not to disparage Hollywood Brown, but a little more productive with the number of targets and catches you get in terms of a yards per catch average than what Hollywood Brown has established thus far in the season. It's going to be a great game, though. I mean, week two, I thought week one was amazing. And yet you look at the slate for week two, it could be even better.
Yeah, a little more good for Hollywood Brown, right? Just a little better than what he had. Look, I think obviously these teams have turned over some from the Super Bowl. I think it's always interesting to see where the line was, right, and where it has been. The Chiefs were a 1-point favorite in that Super Bowl, obviously played on a neutral field. Now, right now, at most books, this is Eagles -1, even -1.5. Obviously in Kansas City, home field advantage in the NFL, usually somewhere between 1 and 2 points. So that's a pretty big move just based in the last 7 months. And we've just had the draft, free agency, and one game to go off of. Public is on the Eagles here, about 75% of the bets so far on the Eagles, majority of the money as well on the Eagles. I think it'll be interesting as well. Injuries, right? Dallas Goedert didn't practice on Wednesday. Don't think he practiced today on Thursday either. That's obviously big. And the Chiefs, Trey Smith, the guard as well, questionable to go. Big part of that offensive line. Another small factor, don't know that it favors either team. It's supposed to be very warm on Sunday. I think I saw about 90 degrees in Kansas City. So just another factor to consider, as well as the Eagles having extended rest from playing on that Thursday opening night. The Chiefs obviously played on Friday, but traveling back from Brazil. So a larger rest difference and travel difference there, both an advantage for the Eagles. It's going to be a really good game. I think this line is short, and this would also only be if it closes the third time in his career that Patrick Mahomes has been an underdog at home in the regular season. He's 1-1 in those games. You generally don't want to bet against Mahomes as an underdog. He's been really good in his career, especially in the postseason. But this is a different Chiefs team, different season.
Yeah, and he's never lost 3 in a row, ever, including the playoffs. So he lost the Super Bowl. They lost week one. If they were to lose this one, it would be a first. Also, heat an issue up and down the East Coast. That game in Baltimore is scheduled to be 85, roughly, at kickoff. So something to keep an eye on Sunday as well. That is Charles. That is Ben. I'm Andrew Siciliano. Coming up, we'll talk to a guy with the best beard in the business, hands down. Ryan Fitzpatrick from Prime Video ahead of TNF. Coming up, you are watching Inside Coverage. You're watching Inside Coverage. I'm Andrew Siciliano. Charles and Ben rejoin us shortly. He played for 9 NFL teams. He is now on maybe the best pre- and post-game team of the NFL, the Prime Video pre- and post-game team. He has the best beard in the business as well. Earlier today, got a chance to talk to the great Ryan Fitzpatrick. It is a pleasure to welcome one of my favorite people, and I really do mean that, not just in the football world, but like people. to Inside Coverage. He is here on behalf of State Farm. He is part of the Prime Video TNF crew on their way to Lambeau to open up week two. How are you, Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I'm great. And how lucky are we? The first game of the season that we get is the Washington Commanders at Lambeau Field versus the Green Bay Packers. How about
is there anything better than Lambeau at night?
No, it's awesome. And just the whole experience in Green Bay, our set is going to be on a rooftop.
Amazing.
Part, which the fans are incredible. If you've never experienced, you have to go. They're so nice. It was for my parents when I was playing, it was their favorite place to go.
Yeah.
Oakland was their least favorite place to go. Everybody is so nice. And the food is so good. It just smells like bratwurst outside the stadium. And it is. It's a wonderful experience, especially at night.
I had been there a few times, but I had never been there for a night game until it was 2019. And I was there with our NFL Network crew for Thursday Night Football. And we did this whole thing where we walked around the neighborhood. For those who don't know, imagine the stadium's in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and every one of those houses throws a party in the driveway, in the backyard, whatever. So I walked around with Mooch, who used to be a coach there, obviously, Steve Mariucci, and we're walking up and down the streets, and everybody is bringing us into their homes and giving us brats and giving us beer. Don't tell anybody. And it's just the most amazing setup. There really is nothing like it. I guess Buffalo, you've been to Buffalo, obviously. You played in Buffalo. Buffalo is somewhat similar, but Lambeau is something that stands on its own.
I mean, last year, Tony Gonzalez and I got invited to a wedding. We sat in on a wedding. Yes, we went.
That's amazing.
And it was beautiful. But it was all about the Packers and football and family. And that's just what they do there. So it's a really cool place and a cool thing for us to be involved in. And for us to have that as the first game on our schedule is going to be pretty epic.
And then next week you go to Buffalo. Go figure. All right, let's talk about the Packers. Two-part question here. Did you have them as a Super Bowl team before the Micah Parsons trade? And do you have them as a Super Bowl team now?
The guys on our set were killing me because last year I had them as a Super Bowl team. I love this football team. Like I really do. They play really hard. I think LaFleur is a great coach. When you watch their offense, it's fun to watch. It's schemed up the right way. Josh Jacobs has been an amazing addition to that team. And even just the way they build their team, I think is awesome. If you look at their wide receiver group, they drafted 6 of the 7 guys. They're really young and really talented in that room. There's a lot of people now jumping on that bandwagon with Micah Parsons coming in. But this was a top 5 or 6 defense last year. Now it's like, where can they go? I think the difficulty now is going to be on the defensive coordinator. How do we scheme this up? Like, how do we fit Micah Parsons in? And that's a great problem to have. But right now, the energy, being able to get over the hump and beat Detroit in that first game, I think was huge. But they're in a good spot right now, and I think a lot of people have them penciled in as a Super Bowl favorite.
All right, so let's break down what Jeff Hafley does. He's their DC, you just mentioned. So they played zone like 35, 36% of the time, which was maybe second or third highest last week. Yet Micah Parsons is so good that he's whipping Penei Sewell. So they could sit back there in zone, and you have to get the ball out quickly as a quarterback because Micah Parsons is coming. How does that change things for you?
You know, that always gave me issues when it's man-to-man coverage or when they're blitzing you and coming after you, but the DBs are in man coverage, you can throw those 50-50 balls. You can throw those crossing routes. When it's zone coverage and their eyes can be on the quarterback knowing that the ball has to come out, that's when turnovers happen because I have to play with anticipation. I have to get that ball out on time and throw it. But if I'm throwing it and DB's eyes are still on me, able to anticipate that before the receiver can even anticipate it because he's running his route, that makes it really difficult for a quarterback. And it's a great place to be as a DB. I talk to Sherm about this all the time, the amount of interceptions that Sherm had in his career. He was a great player, whether it was man or zone. But being able to have his eyes on the quarterback is a huge advantage for the defensive backs.
All right, let's talk about Jaden Daniels. I know you saw him up close. Maybe not his best game last year. It was a Saquon day there when the Eagles and the Commanders were going head to head on TNF. But the combination of skill, youth, and maturity for Jaden Daniels. Have you seen someone that has all three like that in year one, now year two?
I don't know that I have. And especially the fact that like there was never a fall off last year. He started off great, but then he just somehow continued to get better and better and better. And you always talk about, well, as soon as they get film on these guys, they're going to figure it out. With Kingsbury's offense in the past, you know, it struggled in the second half of the season sometimes because there's a lot of film on it. It never turned off. And I go back to, I don't remember what week it was, but they were playing the Bengals in a night game and it was cover zero and he got smacked right in the mouth and he threw an absolute dime to Terry McLaurin in the back of the end zone. When I saw that play, I was like, this dude has it. This dude absolutely has it. And the beautiful thing about Jaden Daniels is even if he doesn't have a full grasp of what's going on, if he gets fooled by the defense, doesn't feel comfortable, whatever it is, his legs, I mean, he was second to Lamar Jackson in quarterback rush yards last year. He is an unbelievable runner of the football. But the way he processes, the way he's able to get the ball out of his hands and how beautiful that deep ball is, I'm excited. You know, Terry McLaurin didn't have a big game in the first. He missed him deep on one. Terry's going to get loose in this next game here, and that'll be fun to see. But I don't know that we've seen a quarterback like Jaden Daniels with the maturity, you know, all the games that he played in college to come in and to do what he did. It's been really cool to watch.
Yeah, that Bengals game last year, I don't know the week either. It was in September. And that was the moment. Same thing. I was eating dinner with a bunch of people, and we all stood up in our seats like, oh, my God, he just did that. He got smacked, threw it down the right sideline. Terry made the catch, and that was kind of like his big stage national arrival moment. And obviously, he was picked second behind Caleb. After watching Monday Night Football, it was a tale of two different games. I get it, like, right out of the gate, 10 for 10. He's on fire. He has that ball on the sideline to Odunze on the opening drive. You're like, all right, I know this guy. This is the guy that won the Heisman. I remember this guy from USC. But then, Fitz, you saw the second half. How concerned are you?
I just hate it for Chicago fans that game ended the way it did, because you could feel it coming through the TV, how excited they were, especially after that first drive. The defense was playing great. I mean, the NFL is better when Chicago has a great football team. And I think Ben Johnson is a great offensive mind. And so this thing is a work in progress. It really is. But I think Caleb's going to play a lot better this year. He's going to play a lot better than last year. And look, there's some things that he does when I think it was the Odunze throw where he rolled out, escape pressure, went to his right and threw a laser, like the velocity that he put on that ball. And it was effortless for him. He does some things that nobody else in the National Football League can do, but he's got to be able to also play in rhythm, play within the pocket, play. You know, Jared Goff was so good in this offense because he had such great command of where the ball was going. Even before the snap, he knew where the ball was going. So Caleb still needs to progress and get there. He went 10 for 10 early. There were a lot of look downfield and throw it to DeAndre Swift, some checkdowns and things. And I think, you know, as the Vikings caught on to that, the ball's got to go down the field a little bit more. But they've got players. The Bears certainly have players on offense. So I think that's what's exciting. I know the fans are disappointed for week one, but I'm excited about this Bears offense going forward.
All right. Last thing real quick, then we'll talk about the ridiculous bust last year, which was, I hope you have that at home. If you were Brian Daboll, would you start Jackson Dart?
So everybody's up in arms screaming, saying, we got to start Jackson Dart. We got to start Jackson Dart. The problem is, when the offense isn't right, when it's not just a quarterback problem, there's a lot of things going on in New York right now. The offensive line didn't play great. You know, there's guys on the outside. We got to figure out what's going on and get everybody on the same page. It's a lot easier to do that with a veteran quarterback. And so, yes, I know that patience is wearing thin and Jackson Dart had a great preseason, but I promise you it's difficult to play quarterback in the NFL. And when things aren't right around you, it makes it almost impossible. And so I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on the Jackson Dart thing, because Russell Wilson is a veteran. Russell Wilson knows how to command a huddle. And that team needs to get a lot better in a lot of different places. So hopefully in the next few weeks that can calm down and that can settle in a little bit. And then my whole thing is I'm seeing like week seven as the week, because week six, I think we have them on Thursday night football. You get those extra few days, a couple days of practice, a couple days to settle in Jackson Dart. So I don't think it happens this early, because I think there are a lot more issues on that offense in week one than the quarterback.
Best wishes to the crew. Break a leg week one. I mean that figuratively, not literally. And hope to see you soon, man. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Awesome talking to you, dude.
The great Ryan Fitzpatrick, everybody. Week seven, oh, by the way, Charles and Ben back with me. Week seven would be on the road at Denver. Not exactly an easy one. Let's go Giants-Cowboys here. Preview that one. Third straight season opener, Charles, for the Giants here without scoring a touchdown, which they have, like, it had never happened since the 42 Lions. That's truly hard to believe. And they are sticking with Russell Wilson. Do you think this is his last shot?
Yeah, look, with all due respect to what Ryan said, and I understand what he's saying about, like, it is difficult to start a rookie quarterback in the NFL, but it's also difficult to watch Russell Wilson. What was he? I think he was 17 for 37. I think I'm right about that in the opener. And not only that, it's doubly bad when you go, well, who led the team in rushing yardage? Well, it was Russell Wilson. That's not a positive when Russell Wilson is leading your offense in rushing yardage and having a completely ineffective day as a passer. You know, I think we are starting to see already after 1 week, and it's not the only team and city and coaching staff, a level of toxicity, because immediately what happens, you get the story of Jackson Dart was willing to speak with the media and wasn't allowed to. At least that's what comes out of, you know, that post game. And, you know, that's you're going downhill quickly with the Giants. And I think if you come out in a game where, look, we saw, you know, last week, to me, the Cowboys played much better than I expected. They played better offensively than I expected. They played better defensively than I expected. Granted, they're going to come into this game with some injuries, but this can't be a situation where the Giants get smoked again on offense in the second straight game, because the Dart question will gain so much steam so quickly after a second straight loss. And there's no question in my mind people are going to start to ask. It's not just going to be people talking about Brian Callahan's job. It's going to be people talking about Brian Daboll's job. And how long do we wait into the season before we start questioning whether or not he's the one who's potentially the first coach to go?
What do you say, Ben?
And I was going to say to Charles's point, Giants 4 of 16 on third down, 231 total yards, 4 yards per pass. That's bad. 3.2 yards per rush. That's worse, especially when Russell Wilson is your leading rusher. The only good thing about that game was that for the 4 box of Sunday Ticket, you could put that one off pretty early. You didn't have to worry about watching that. But that being said, last week we had sharp money at books pushing the Giants down. That line moved significantly. The Giants were initially a touchdown underdog and closed under that. So something to remember too, the sharps are not always right. They're right more times than certainly the public is over the long run. But there were a lot of people who liked the Giants last week. I would say this week, Cowboys open 3.5, 4. This line is up. It's at BetMGM. It's Cowboys -5, 5.5. It is at 6 at other books. Public is all over the Cowboys. Cowboys have that rest edge as well. And the Giants, Andrew Thomas, a big potential injury as well to see. Looks like Deron Bland for the Cowboys, probably out. But no surprise, public all over the Cowboys.
A couple of crazy notes on this one. First of all, Russell Wilson, if you like quarterback wins and losses as a real stat, has lost 5 consecutive starts if you go back to last year with the Steelers. The other one that blew me away, Dak Prescott. Now, granted, he's been injured. That doesn't mean that the Cowboys have beaten the Giants 13 straight, but Dak has beaten the Giants 13 straight, which I had no idea. And the other one, and this one is it makes you go, wait a minute, what? This is the first time the Giants and Cowboys have played in Dallas at 1 o'clock Eastern, so 12 local, at AT&T Stadium ever. Ever. The last time they had a 1 o'clock kick in Dallas was in 2005 at the old Texas Stadium. Like, that's just bonkers.
That's crazy. Yeah.
All those Eli Manning Sunday night. Yeah, Monday night games.
Yeah. they don't play in Dallas at 1 o'clock, except this one, they are going to play in Dallas. All right, let's move on to another interesting one. Another on the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour, except it's not his revenge, it's the DK Metcalf revenge game. The Seahawks come to Pittsburgh to play the high-flying, because Rodgers threw four touchdown passes, Pittsburgh Steelers. This is an Adam Amin, Mark Sanchez, Christina Pink game. Aaron Rodgers, now 28 career games with four touchdown passes and no picks, tying Tom Brady. He is also two touchdowns behind Charles Brett Favre on the all-time list. Not that that's a revenge item, but I'm sure that's a feather in his cap that he would certainly like. And I know that a lot of people think this is DK Metcalf against Tariq Woolen. Mike McDonald was asked yesterday, might Tariq Woolen get benched this week? Because he did not have a good week in week one against the Niners. And he didn't say no. So there are a lot of what was week one storylines here, truly. Like, who are these teams?
Yeah, I mean, Reek Woolen, that's definitely that's touchy there for him to, you know, that's his job status as a starter it's on the hot seat right now. I mean, there's no way that you get a response like that and you're not sitting there thinking, okay, I'm on the clock here. I have to come out in week two and, you know, have a great game. And the Steelers, to me, I got to admit, they were fun to watch. Aaron Rodgers played well. He looked good. He looked like he was having fun. You know, Calvin Austin was a piece in that offense. I mean, you start to see other elements come to the surface. It's not like it's just DK Metcalf. If you watch that game, you're like, okay, there are other reasons to feel good about, you know, this Pittsburgh offense. Now, conversely, Mike Tomlin was not happy about how they played defensively. TJ Watt was not happy about how they played defensively, you know, and rightfully so. But look, the whole offseason was focused through this Aaron Rodgers prism and what would he look like, and, you know, the all-in nature of the veterans that they added to this team. Even the draft picks, the guys that they drafted, it was all about, hey, 2025 is sort of we're pushing our chips in the middle of the table here. For one game, I will say that Aaron Rodgers looked probably the best Aaron Rodgers I've seen since his best days left in Green Bay. Am I wrong? Like, did that not look like the guy that the New York Jets were praying for and just never got?
Yeah. Even though he only threw the ball once beyond 20 yards downfield. I mean, DK's biggest play was a short little one that he turned off. He got to the sideline and he busted up, you know, for another 15, 20 yards. But yes, he looked that good. He did.
Yeah, and I would, just to jump in, sorry, do you want to finish, Charles? I don't know if you had anything else.
No, go ahead. No, take it away, Ben.
Okay. I was just going to say, he also took some vicious hits as well. Like, it still was, there were a couple you're like, man, is he getting up from that? That game also ran diametrically opposed to the Giants-Commanders game in terms of intensity. I mean, that looked like a playoff game. Those teams did not like each other and both obviously wanted to win, either to beat Rodgers or to win for Rodgers. In terms of this game, Steelers-Seahawks, lowest total on the board, which is interesting because the the Jets-Steelers last week was the lowest total and was one of only four games of the 16 to fly over the total. This one is at 40. We have seen some sharp money at a couple books on the Seahawks plus three. The public, as you would expect, on the Steelers, about 75% of the bets on them to cover. Interesting, though, before the season, the Steelers were projected to be favorites in six games. These first 2 weeks, obviously two of those, they're underdogs potentially in seven of their last nine. So this is really a game, if they're going to get over that win total of 8.5, if they're going to make the playoffs, this is a really important game for the Steelers. They obviously squeaked out week one. Can they get it done as a short favorite here in week two?
Yeah, some other random notes here from this one. Other than JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigma, the passing attack a week ago for the Seahawks was kind of a massive question mark here. Sam Darnold, 9.5 pass yards per attempt targeting JSN, 2.9 pass yards per attempt targeting everyone not named JSN. But if you're concerned about the travel here, and Seattle is as difficult a place as there is to get to in the NFL, all the obviously northwest corner of the country, at least especially to and from the East Coast, the Seahawks are 7-1 on the road since 24. And when traveling east, the Seahawks are 19-4 in 1 p.m. Eastern time games on Sunday since 2018, which is the best in the NFL. Makes no sense, but they are that good. Coming up, Charles, Ben, hi, I'm Andrew. The rest of your week 2 preview, including the Bills and the Jets. Because, yeah, it's AFC East pleasantries being renewed. Don't go anywhere. You're watching Inside Coverage. You're watching Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. My name is Andrew. Ben is here. Charles is here. Let's blow through the rest of the week 2 games, guys, including a short week for the Bears. They now have to go to Detroit after the heartbreaking loss on Monday night, the Ben Johnson Bowl, if you will. But the Lions are not the same after one game, Charles, without Ben Johnson. The last 2 years, they've averaged 29 points a game. Week 1, panic, 13 points and 246 yards in the loss at Lambeau. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, look, John Morton's already getting questioned. You know, Dan Campbell got a little chippy in a press conference this week when a reporter asked him, you know, about how the offense, at least this reporter felt like the offense looked a little bit different. Maybe the communication was different. He talked about the motions, and Dan Campbell basically was like, one week and our offense is all, you know, so different in a week. I'm paraphrasing here, but you could see Dan Campbell, you know, the cool that is Dan Campbell starting to chip away a little bit there. And, you know, to me, it was interesting when you looked at that interior of their line, you know, Graham Glasgow at center, I mean, they got a problem. And, you know, both guard positions, the entire interior of their line. If you want to ask why the Detroit Lions didn't have the ability to get some of those deep plays, you know, Jameson Williams, if you want to ask why Jared Goff's throwing to running backs and Sam Laporta, it's because they did not have time to let deep routes develop. It wasn't there. But real quick, I'm just going to say about Chicago. I lived there for 8 years. I've seen that city get toxic over a quarterback. Kudos to CBS. They trotted out the first 18 starts of Mitch Trubisky and Caleb Williams and compared the passing yards per game, the total touchdowns, the quarterback rating, the completion percentage, almost identical between the two players in their first 18 games. And as a person who lived there and watched them celebrate Jay Cutler and then completely turn on the guy as quickly as possible, this feels like this could go badly very, very quickly for Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams if they do not turn this around pretty fast.
Yeah, as a Vikings fan, I think my wife was concerned about my mental health and what the season might look like in that first half. But they turned it around. This open lines -4.5. It's been bet up to 6. Some sharp money in there as well, moving that line up. Public as well on the Lions, 70% of the bets, 80% of the money on them to cover. Lions second last year in yards per play, which is a metric a lot of bettors and handicappers use, 6.3. They had 3.8 yards per play on Sunday against the Packers. So obviously offense looked terrible. We'll see if this was a 1 week aberration or not. Good news for the Bears. Looks like DJ Moore is okay after that brutal hit late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, he does look to be okay. And here's the crazy stat here. Caleb Williams, of quarterbacks taken number 1 overall, believe it or not, through 18 games, has the best touchdown interception ratio of any of them, believe it or not. Yet, after watching the second half of that game, people are ready to trade him for a bag of, I don't know, Italian beef or something like that, which is a Chicago delicacy, which is really just, it's really just a French dip sandwich. That's all it is.
Some expired jardinière.
That's all it is. Kenny Albert, Jonathan Vilma, and Megan O'Leary on the call on this one. Meantime, let's go Jaguars and Bengals in Cincinnati. Chris Lewis, Logan Ryan, friend of the program, Tiffany Blackman, actually all three friends of the program, on the call on that one. Here's what blew me away, Charles. The Jaguars are trying to open 2-0 for the first time since 2018 when Doug Marrone was coach. And the Bengals are also trying to open 2-0 for the first time since 2018 when Marvin was the coach.
Yeah, I'll just take the Jaguars here. I'm going to tell you one of the things I thought when Liam Cohen left the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and went to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The first guy I thought about was Travis Etienne. I was like, can he do for Travis Etienne what he was able to do for Bucky Irving and that running game in Tampa Bay? And how much that helped, by the way, Baker Mayfield by having not only depth, but explosive ability out of the backfield. And I think we saw that almost immediately for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, Bashal Tutin's another guy that they're going to get more time to because they dealt Tank Bigsby to the Philadelphia Eagles, which great pickup by the Eagles. But again, I'm now looking at ETN and I'm saying this could be the running back this year who, because of how Liam Cohen structures that running game, and Trevor Lawrence could be that quarterback who benefit the most from a coaching change this offseason. Because look, week one, that offense, what they were able to do with some of the explosives and how they structured things for the running attack, it reminded me a lot of what Liam Cohen was able to do in Tampa.
And C. Rob took the Jaguars, I'll take the Bengals. I believe they had 7 yards in the second half of total offense against the Browns. Was that just an in-division game? The Browns are used to that, or is that concern for the Bengals? And same thing on the defense. The Browns are moving the ball during that game, missed field goals and some other mistakes. Some weird interceptions is why they lost that game. That was not an impressive week one win for the Bengals.
All right, we got to hurry up here. We got 4 minutes to go. Give me 30 seconds, Charles, on the Rams and the Titans. Matthew Stafford has never beaten Tennessee. Who knew?
Forget Matthew Stafford. I'm worried about Brian Callahan here. I think just seeing how things are going with the press corps there, it's turned very toxic there really quickly. Obviously, you had the issue where he admitted he didn't know a rule about, you know, an elbow counting as a player being down, didn't challenge a key moment in that game that could have benefited the offense. I'm worried about where it's going for Brian Callahan right now.
For me, get Cam Ward some help. He played okay against a really good Broncos defense, a lot of drops in that game. They stayed in that game. That was the defense. He looked pretty good. They need to get him some help.
Yeah, absolutely. You watch that game, you come away going, all right, I think Cam Ward's going to be just fine. Patriots and Dolphins. I don't know if the Dolphins are fine, nor do I know if the Patriots are fine, Charles, because their last 8 drives, week one against the Raiders, 6 punts, an interception, and a field goal. What do you think? Give me 20.
Yeah, they got to get more out of their wide receiving core. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, you try to you draft picks. You go out and you get veterans and try to surround Drake May with pass catching options. And I still think that offense looks limited.
And go figure, the Dolphins favored by a point in this game. So it should be a really interesting one from a betting perspective. I think the Patriots look better than the final score there. I'm not sure the Dolphins did against the Colts. I think the Patriots win this game.
All right. Nance and Romo and Tracy Wolfson on the call for the Bills and the Jets. Buffalo has won 3 straight and 8 of 10 against the Jets, but they are tired. They played Sunday night, nearly 80 plays offensively. Charles, we got 90 seconds. Go.
I'm on the opposite side of the Baltimore Ravens game where, to me, again, you expel that much energy. Yes, you come back, you win a huge game. But again, I wonder if there's a letdown here for the Bills after all that emotion gets expended ultimately in week one. Still think they're probably the best team in football right now. But I do think this is already in week two, one of those games where you could have a surprising letdown.
1 minute
Bills
show,
minus
Ben,
six
go.
And a half. Bills minus 6.5. Be very careful putting that in a teaser, a money line parlay, classic letdown spot.
All right, we haven't hit the Broncos and Colts, but I mean, it happens. Broncos and Colts, Panthers and Cardinals, Falcons and Vikings, rounding out your schedule. It's a 9+3 week if you're scoring at home, meaning 9 games early in the 1 o'clock Eastern time window, 3 games late in the 4 o'clock Eastern time window. My brain still works on red zone time for 18 years. It's burned into my brain. That's how I look at a schedule. And it is a Monday night doubleheader this week as well. Bucks and Texans, Chargers and Raiders. We will leave those 2 previews. And for the record, I hate the Monday night doubleheader. For who, for what? Make 1 game early and 1 game late. Like, why play them at the same time? please, like, for the love of somebody. All right, for Charles, for Ben, enjoy week two, everybody. My name is Andrew. We're back here on Monday. Have fun. Enjoy it. Gentlemen, thank you. Charles, feel better, and I won't ask you again, I promise, okay? So long, everybody.